Good afternoon. So, first, logistical note. So, the exam is graded. The scores are on the gradebook. Keys are on Colab. You can view the exam, your exam, what things were scored, and submit reader requests via TPEGS. There are two questions, parts of questions we dropped outside of TPEGS, meaning that the gradebook has a calculation where we subtracted the points for those questions and we didn't consider them part of the total at all. So the X out of Y you see on TPEGS is not your actual grade on the exam, that's what's on the gradebook. The median was 83.5 after applying rubric and all that. 25th percentile was 77. 75th percentile was 90.7. So that's the exam. So please, if you have regrade requests and questions in general, I prefer them sooner rather than, you know, at the end of the semester would not be great. Also, there's an HCL homework, which is based in the lab. You hopefully did yesterday. That's due next Wednesday. Please actually do it. Any logistics questions before I talk about actual material? Great. Okay, so we're going to talk about pipelining, a way to make circuits faster. Things like our processor design. But I'm going to start by not dealing with an electronic problem, but something, you know, very simple and human. Here's sort of a way to do laundry. So I have two loads of laundry to do, my whites and my colors. I take my whites, I put them in the washer, done with that. So I move them from the washer to the dryer, wait for the dryer to finish. When the dryer's finished, I take them out, fold them up, and then I'm done with the whites. So now I can start on the colors. So I take the colors, put them in the washer, take them out of the washer, put them in the dryer, wait for that, take them out, then I actually fold them up. And then I'm done with my laundry. Is this the way anyone would do laundry here? No. So what would you do instead? Any volunteers? Yeah.
Wash the whites, put them in the dryer, the colors in the washer, while
the whites are in the dryer. Yeah, so this seems very wasteful because I have all this time, the washer and the dryer are doing nothing when they don't have to be. So it seems like instead I should do this process where when I'm done with the washer, rather than just leave it sitting there doing nothing, I use it immediately for the next thing while I'm doing that. And then when the dryer is available, I use it immediately for the next thing and so on. And this is the idea of pipelining. We have multiple steps, sort of like an assembly line. We do each step of one thing while we're possibly dealing with other things. And we get more stuff done. So in particular, you know, it's actually taking me a bit longer to do the colors. If you look at when I start and when I finish, it took a little bit of extra time. But I got a lot more loads of laundry done. I can get three loads of laundry done at the same time with time left over. But each of those individual loads might be taking a little longer because we have this little bit of wasted time. Right, we couldn't keep things going because the dryer is a little bit slower than everything else. So I needed to wait for the dryer to finish. So I'm actually finishing my second and third and so on load of laundry slower, but I'm perfectly happy doing that because this is more efficient overall. I'm getting more loads of laundry done, which is what I really care about. I don't really care about how long it is from the time I collect my colors to when I get them out. I care how long does it take me to do all my laundry. And, you know, you may notice that this trade-off here, this diagram might not be realistic. It probably looks more like this, but it's still a big win. So we're going to apply the same concept to circuits, where we're going to see that, oh, we're not actually taking advantage of the resources we have, and we can get more work done, even though we might not be doing everything quite as fast as before. So there's two concepts we're going to talk about to measure how efficient we are. So one of them is latency. So latency is the amount of time it takes to get one thing done. So in this laundry scenario, when my pipeline of work to do starts getting, having things in it, so we have everything's busy, it takes, in this diagram, 2.1 hours. And that includes the time I'm waiting for the dryer to be available. And that's the latency, that's the time from when I start doing something to when I finish with it. And this is higher than the latency when we weren't doing pipelining because of that wasted time. Previously, from the time I accepted that load of laundry to the time I finished, it would be a little bit faster. So if my goal was to run a business where I took your load of laundry and gave it back as fast as possible, this is not what I want to do, but that isn't my goal. My goal is to get all my laundry done. So we'll also talk about throughput. So throughput is the rate at which we get many things done. So it's sort of the rate at which we're doing loads of laundry overall. And one way of measuring that is how long does it take between each time I finish a load. So if you're just watching what comes out of the laundry room, you'll say a little less than an hour after the last load, I get a new load every time as I'm doing this. And you'll observe the same rate if you look, for example, at how often it is between when I start a new load. That's going to be a little less than an hour, the same amount of time, because I'm just waiting for whatever the slowest thing is, in this case, the dryer. I either need to wait behind the dryer for it to finish, or I'm waiting for the dryer to finish. So the rate at any point I measure when this gets started is a little less than an hour, the speed of the dryer. And so our throughput, which we'll measure in work per unit time, so loads an hour is 1.2 loads an hour, which is much faster than what I was getting doing one at a time, even though each one takes longer if I start look at where I started and where I finish it. So questions about is that throughput versus latency? Everyone good, bad, weird? So we're gonna take this out of our laundry scenario, our nice familiar human scenario, and look at a circuit. So here's a toy circuit where I have two adders and I'm using them to multiply a number times 3. So a nice simple circuit. And let's say that each of these adders, we take in an input, and after their input changes, they take some amount of time to produce the output that's the sum of their two inputs. Let's say that's 50 picoseconds. Then if I input a number, say 7 here, this first adder will take 50 picoseconds where its output is changing and eventually stabilizes on the result, which is 14 in this case. So that's the time from when it got its input to when it can first produce its result. So it keeps outputting 14. Now that it's outputting this stable number 14 here, the second adder can actually add 14 and 7. So it does that addition, takes 50 picoseconds to stabilize on a result. So then 100 picoseconds later, we get our answer, which is 21. And just like in our laundry scenario, if you look at when our adders are actually doing work, we have a bunch of time when they're not doing anything. We have these adders in the circuit, and they just aren't doing any actual useful work half the time. Wouldn't it be nice if our goal was to get the most stuff done to have them working in that other part of time? So if our goal is to multiply as many things times 3 as possible, we want to make that unused, that white space there, actually be doing one of those, part of those computations, even as the other adder is doing a different part, just like we use the washer and dryer at the same time for different loads of laundry. We want to use the first adder at the same time as the second adder, but for different things we're multiplying times 3. So the hope here is that we start out with this 100 picosecond latency here, which is 10 results in nanosecond, and we're gonna get it down by half, because we're gonna do twice as much stuff per unit time. That that's what it would seem like. So hopefully we can get it up to 20, or latency 20, even though the latency is still 100. But hopefully we can do 20 results in nanoseconds. So we'd expect something like this. You know, so you might say, okay, so let's just input a new number about every 50 picoseconds. Say, so we input, the idea is we input our first number, then we get 14 in the middle, then we get out 21, the same amount of time later, but we could just input another number about 50 picoseconds later, then get its result. So we're doing more multiplying times 3, but we still have to wait about the same amount of time for each result. So can I just input numbers like this and have this timeline? So you're shaking your head. You want to volunteer? Why not?
Because the input, so like, if you can, do you mind flipping back to the circuit?
Sure.
So A is being input into the first ad and into the second ad. So if you just change the input, then you're going to mess up your second ad.
Yeah, so the way this is wired, if I change the input to 17 here, that's going to change this input here. It's going to be adding 2A, which is 14, and 17, which is not what we want. It's actually worse than that, because the result of the add circuit is not going to be stable. It's going to be changing, and our circuit won't actually have a well-defined result. And the big problem we had is that we didn't have the right number we had the number from the wrong step being input. And we just needed to remember what that old input was so we could use it later. So our key solution is going to be to add storage. We want to remember what the value is that we're supposed to be executing for the second adder. We want to have some place to store that, which we didn't need before because previously we effectively, our input was staying the same. So it was acting as storage for what are we working on now. But now, since we have two things to work on, we need to store them in different places. Also, we have our intermediate result. We need to store that somewhere because that's going to be changing as we're computing the next thing. But we need to remember the intermediate result we want to work on now. So we need storage for that, whereas previously we just relied on this wire will have that value. That's no longer going to be true because we want that wire to have the value for the next thing we're computing. But we still want to finish computing the old thing. And if we need storage, the way we know to do that is with registers. So we're just going to add registers, just draw a line through this circuit and add registers on everything which crosses it. So I input the value 7, then I compute 14, so I have 7 on this register down here to remember what value we're computing for the second add now, and 14, the intermediate result. So after the first rising edge of the clock, this second half of the circuit is computing the second step of doing 7 times 3, while the first half can do the first step of 17 times 3. And we needed registers for that because registers give us a way to give a signal and transition to the next step, to take our inputs and send them to the next step without having to worry about when does the input change, is that going to affect the add computation. We know when it's going to change, it's at the rising edge of the clock when we want to actually advance to the next step. And so with this, we get sort of the timeline we were looking for. We just need to add something to the circuit to make that possible. So where we input values about every 50 picoseconds, and we get out values about every 50 picoseconds. Now, each individual value we don't get out after 50 picoseconds. It takes longer than that, but the total number of computations we're doing is about 1 every 50 picoseconds. So we've basically made this twice as fast. If what we care about is computing as many things times 3 as possible, we haven't made it faster if what we care about is computing a single thing times 3. But for something like a processor, you probably care more about executing lots of instructions than how fast each instruction is. So I showed you this timing where we acted like this is going to be twice as fast. And that's not quite true, because there's some unfortunate aspect of reality that's going to creep in here. So when we talked about registers, we had this very idealized view that there's a rising edge of a clock, which is this straight vertical line where things happen instantaneously. And you know, that was our view of registers. There's this rising edge of the clock, and the output just changes based on reading the input. And registers are physical things, and they're not actually instantaneous because that's not something that's physically possible. So registers actually have these tolerances. So there's some amount of time before the rising edge of the clock during which the input to the register needs to be stable. It can't be changing. If it is changing, the register might physically do something weird and output a bad value. So there's some amount of time, the person who gives you the register is going to say, I'm not going to guarantee that this register will do anything interesting, or useful at least, if you don't make the value stable before there, before this amount of time, before the rising edge of the clock signal. Otherwise, I might not be able to read the input. Also, registers can't instantaneously change the voltage of their output to change their output. So there's some amount of time after the rising edge of the clock during which the output is changing and will eventually stabilize on the new value of the register. So often these times are pretty negligible. They're pretty small, but they're going to end up mattering for pipelining. And so the total of these two types of times is what we'll call the register delay. So this is the amount of extra time needing to either store your result in a register or read your result from a register adds to your circuit. And you can think of that we need to do the computation and the register stuff anywhere in our circuit here, because we need to read values probably from registers and write values to registers. So we pay for this time plus the computation at every step. Yeah? So the register delay is the amount of extra time we need, which is the sum of the amount of time we need to have our input be stable and the amount of time we need to wait for the output to change after the rising edge of the clock. So these have specific terms if you take an EE course that we will not be using or testing you on. And these are times that you will get from the register designer. The electrical engineer who designs the register is going to tell you, here's my register, it has this amount of time you need to wait to have your input stable, and this amount of time you need to wait after the clock for the input to change. Okay. So knowing this, let's say we have a 10 picosecond register delay. And we want to know, how fast is this actually? So 10 picoseconds, that's a small amount of time, but addition's also going to be pretty fast. So you know, our throughput is going to be that we need to get a value out of a register and onto the next register. So we need to wait for a register and the computation after it, or alternately, equivalently, you can say we need to do a computation and then place it in the register and send it off. Either way, you're including one register in the following computation. That's what we need to do to get to put a value in or get a value out. That's what we need to wait for. So in this picture, we're going to get one thing out every 60 picoseconds. So even though the computation is 50 picoseconds, we have 10 picoseconds because registers are going to need time, because that's our register delay. And that, instead of giving us 20 billion operations a second, gives us 16. So a pretty hefty cost of this overhead of just storing values that previously were basically free because they were just on a wire, because we needed to have actual registers store them instead of just having the wires be connected directly. So questions about how I got this timing? Probably not yet. So this is the basic idea of pipelining, is that we divide things up this way and we get this throughput improvement, which is not sort of what you'd expect of like doubling it because we have these overheads, but is pretty close and definitely worthwhile if what you care about is getting lots of things done. They'd say, well, we can do better, right? So why don't we do more of this? So you can say, you know, we had two stages. We divided things up into two pieces, so 50 picoseconds. Let's divide things up into four pieces. So we just need to figure out a way to split an adder in half. Now, we don't know how adders work, so we'll just assume that that's possible, but that might be a problem. We just split the adders in half and have a register store whatever the intermediate result, whatever values you get halfway from doing an add. We store those, and those partial results, and we can have our pipeline here, where instead of spending 50 picoseconds on computation every stage, we spend 25, so we end up doing more stuff per unit time. So we have this split of 10 picoseconds for the register delay and 25 picoseconds for each of these halves of the adders. So as a comprehension check, so now that I've done this, what is my throughput? So I probably didn't double it again. I didn't double it the first time. So how close am I to getting four times the throughput? Am I really off? So compute this and check with your neighbor that you agree on the value. Okay, anyone want to volunteer their answer? No, okay.
1/35 picoseconds.
So 1/35 picoseconds. So what you look at is we need to do half of an add, and we need to have a register read a value and output it. That's what needs to happen every cycle. So the read a value and output it is 10 picoseconds, the register delay, and the half of an add is 25. It doesn't matter which half of the add we use, they're all the same. So it's nice and easy that way. So we get 1/35 picoseconds, which is a little less than 30 billion operations per second. Where if you said, I'm going to take something that takes 100 picoseconds and divide it into four pieces, you'd expect to get 4 times 40 billion operations. We got less than 30. That's the efficiency we've lost because we have the register delay. We need to actually store values, which takes time. So questions on this? Yes. Yes, so it will be different, which we will get to in a second. Okay, so this is an idea. So we've made things faster, and yeah, it's not 4 times faster, but it's 3 times faster, so it seems like the sort of thing that's worth doing. No, that was still a pretty significant improvement, so assuming we can do this seems good. So one question is, sir, what's the limit? How much faster can we make our circuit if what we care about is getting the most results? And we have this general phenomenon of diminishing returns, that if we divide things up into more and more pieces, that register delay, that 10 picoseconds, which is just an artifact of how a register works, ends up mattering more and more and more. And this means that if you look at the speed up we get by splitting things evenly with more and more stages, we have this sort of asymptotic behavior, and the asymptote is our register delay. That we're getting closer and closer to that, never reaching it. And we also have these clearly diminishing returns. So adding the first stage gave us almost a 2x speed up, well, 83% faster. Adding the 15th stage is going to give us 2% speed up. So most of the value is going to be in adding the first few pipeline stages. More can help, but you're spending a lot of effort for not that much improvement. And you can also look at this from a throughput perspective. So this is the inverse throughput. This is time per completion. This is the actual usual throughput measure, which is ops per nanosecond. We have the same asymptotic behavior. It's just our asymptote is not the register delay in picoseconds, but the maximum rate at which we can update registers, which is one every 10 nanoseconds, so 100 updates per nanosecond. One every 10 picoseconds, so 100 updates per nanosecond. You have the same improvement. So we have these diminishing returns, so most of our gain from pipelining is going to be splitting things up the first few times. We can do more, and real processors have tried to do a lot more, but you're getting a lot less value for the amount of effort you're going to be putting in to add, say, 15 pipeline stages. And speaking of effort, one reasonable question to ask is, can I even split things up like this? So I assume that we can divide up the ad into two pieces and assume that those two pieces are nice and even, but that's not a thing we can do necessarily in practice. We don't talk about how adders work, so you can't really say whether or not that's possible, but in general, we're not going to be able to just take a circuit and divide it into two pieces and have that work. Often we can divide it up, but we'll get something like this, you know, where something we end up not splitting up evenly, and we have two uneven pieces, and you alluded to this question earlier, so I guess it's already answered. So the throughput now, would be 30 plus 10. So note that we made a stage faster, and that doesn't help us. So one part of this is faster, doesn't matter, just like it didn't matter in the laundry scenario that our washer was faster than our dryer. If we made our washer twice as fast, I would not get laundry done faster. So what matters is the slowest stage. So if I want to compute the throughput now, I look at something including the slowest part. So what's the register delay plus the slowest stage we have to worry about with this uneven split? Because we couldn't quite divide that adder up into two equal pieces, that's going to be a bit bigger, and we're going to lose some throughput. In this case, we went from 28 billion operations a second to 25. And this is going to happen often in practice. It's very rare that you'll be able to take some nice, fast, simple circuit like an adder and find that it's conveniently splits into two pieces that are the same size. And so this means that in practice, when we add more pipeline stages, yes, each time we add them, we'll get more throughput, but we might not get that much more throughput. So a realistic scenario is that, you know, we start with a 100 picosecond circuit and we divide it up into two pieces. So, you know, they're approximately even, but maybe one's like 10 picoseconds bigger. Maybe one's 45, that adds up to more than 100 because, you know, we couldn't actually find pieces which don't add a little extra time. because things don't, some things happen in parallel in the original, and it's hard to make happen precisely in the new one. That would be a real thing that would happen. So you get these uneven splits where you may even have a little extra time. It's still faster, still more throughput, but we have even more diminishing returns. So when things were split up perfectly, we had pretty bad returns as far as improved throughput after like 5 stages. It's worse in practice because we have these extra penalties of I can't actually design half an adder. And this is true for other components, like I can't design half a register file. Probably. Or I can, but that's probably going to have some extra cost beyond the register delays. So in practice, we're going to end up with these uneven splits. So pipelining is going to help us with throughput. It's not going to help us in sort of the ideal way where you'll say, hey, I'm doing 4 things at once. It's going to be 4 times as fast. It's not even going to be close. And how close it is depends on sort of how long the thing was to start with. If it was bigger to start with, the register delay matters less. It's more likely you can split it up into even pieces because there's more stuff. But it's never going to be perfect. And when we're dealing with processors, we're eventually going to want to get into really pretty simple pipeline stages. So we're going to have some unevenness, definitely. So any questions about our pipelining returns before I start talking about applying this to actual processors? Okay, so we saw returns of pipelining, and I'm going to return to our single cycle processor, and we have these conceptual stages. And they were conceptual, you remember, because we had all these things that write, they all write at the end of the cycle, even though they're in separate stages in our single cycle design, and all our reads happen sometime in the middle of the cycle, not necessarily in order all the time. This was just the conceptual order. I told you, I just use it to figure out what you do in each part of the processor so you don't have to think about the whole thing all at once. So here, now that we're talking about pipelining, we see the real reason our textbook authors decided to divide things into stages. It wasn't to design the single cycle processor. It was because we're going to turn these into our pipeline stages. And that's why they made the idiosyncratic choice of what exactly happens in each stage. They did it because they know it works in a pipeline. So there's one notable change we're going to make, which is that we're going to combine the fetch and PC update stages. And this is because we want to have one instruction in every stage, and after we fetch an instruction, we're going to send it to the decode stage. We're going to read the register file for it. And while that's happening, we want to be fetching the next instruction. But to do that, we need to know what the PC is for the next instruction. So we're going to do the PC update along with the fetch, so that we can always have an instruction to put into the pipeline every single clock cycle. We don't want to wait until the end, until we go through all the stages. That would not be any faster. That would, in fact, be slower, because we have those extra register delays and the uneven split, because probably the data memory and the register file and the ALU don't take the exact same amount of time. So now we have a reason for the stages, and now things actually will happen in the order you might think from the listing of stages, because they'll be in separate clock cycles. So let's look at applying the idea of this pipelining division to a simple CPU. So I'll start with our add-only processor. So this is our processor that only does adds. There's no memory because we don't need memory to do add instructions. No data memory, I should say. There's an instruction memory because we need to read instructions. And I have the part of the processor which does the fetch and PC update highlighted. And we also have our other components. So we can just say where on this diagram are each of these components. And basically what we're going to do is these are our pipeline stages, and we're going to take everything between them and put registers there. But there's something we need to fix first. So there's a problem here, which is that normally, when we're doing pipelining, you want to have the fetch stage do something and then send it off to the decode stage, and we have the decode stage do something and send it off to the execute stage, and so on. But we have a case where the fetch stage is doing something and sending it off to the write-back stage, which is not what we want to do, especially since we're sending most of our stuff off to the decode stage. So, as a first step, I'm going to redraw this picture so we're not doing that. I'm not going to change what the circuit does. I'm just going to redraw that wire to go all the way around. So the fetch sends the value to the decode stage, which sends it to the execute stage, which sends it back to the write-back stage. It's the same wire, I just drew it in a different way, so it goes through all the stages. So now everything that fetch does to figure for this instruction, it sends to the decode stage. Everything decode does for the instruction, it sends to the execute stage, and so on. You don't ever skip a step. And this is what we want to do because the thing the decode stage is going to do next is what fetch is doing now. The thing the write-back stage is going to do next is what execute's doing now, not anything about what fetch is doing now. So after we do that, we're going to add registers between all the stages. Because we need to store the value that we're currently working on, and we need a place where we will store the result of the stage when it's done, to send it to the next stage. So we're going to just draw a line separating all the stages and put registers in everything that crosses it. Okay. So we have three what I'll call register banks, and I'm going to label these by the names of the two stages they connect. So fetch decode are the registers that come get their values from fetch and send them to decode. Decode execute get their values from decode and send them to execute, and so on. And we don't have a memory stage, so we have an execute write back register bank because there's no, we just don't even have the memory step in this processor. And so if we do this, we also have an extra register, which I will label as fetch, because that's what it does. That's what it's for. We send that value from fetch to fetch. And this is okay to do because we're actually sending what we want to do for the next instruction. So this is why that's an exception to our idea that we send that fetch produces values for decode. It produces values for fetch when we're talking about a different instruction. The value being input to the PC is about the next thing to do, not about the current thing we're doing. And that's the sort of exception to the rule that we pass values from one stage to the next is when we need to figure out what we're doing next. Or deliberately communicating between two instructions. So let's look at what's going to be in these registers as we execute these two instructions. So first, we're going to read the first instruction. And while that's happening, the input to the PC is going to be the address of the second instruction. And the input to the fetch decode registers is going to be the register numbers 8 and 9 from the first instruction that were just read from the instruction memory. Then we're going to read the second instruction from the instruction memory, sending their register values as input to the fetch decode. And at the same time, these two, the fetch decode registers, are sending to the decode stage the values from the first instruction. So while we're reading the second instruction from the instruction memory, we're reading the registers for the first instruction and sending them into these registers here in front of the execute stage. Then we have another rising edge of the clock, and now we actually send the values from the first instruction into the adder, and also the destination register number, which we'll need later, is going to be sent around. And at the same time, we're reading registers 10 and 11 for the second instruction, because that's what our fetch decode registers are sending to the register file. So this progression makes sense. So basically we have the second instruction chasing the first around the processor. And we can think of this more systematically. I can just write down during each cycle what's in every register, and we got this advance where each instruction goes through multiple cycles to execute, and we have its values in those cycles. But at any particular cycle, we have values from multiple instructions, one in each stage. Yes?
So after the execute write by stage, it goes writing destination E and dereferencing destination E. Can you not do that in the same block cycle?
So you're saying that we're reading. So the problem here you're having is that here, that for example, in cycle three here, we could be reading from 9. Is what you're worried about?
No, because I feel like the advantage of having a wider direction from the split right to destination is because it needs to be able to have that register that it's writing to by the time it gets all the way around, right? You know, and if you can't specify what destination is and write destination in the exact same cycle, which is what this.
Okay, so the question is, can we specify destination E, what the register number is, and the value to write in the same cycle? Is that?
Like, this design is making it seem like you can both specify the register and write that register. So it's writing destination E and it's also writing what's in the register.
Yes. So this is
the exact same cycle.
Yes, this is how our register file works. So on the rising edge of the clock, the register file in our design looks at the destination E input and copies the value on the next star destination E input into that register number. On every rising edge of the clock, it looks at its current inputs for the net register number and the next value for it and copies.
But would it take 2 clocks? I think that's because destination E doesn't update until after the whole thing has gone through. And so it needs destination E to update, and then it'll update what's in destination E after the next clock cycle.
The update is simultaneous with the updating. It's at the rising edge of the clock, that's when the destination E register is updated. So based on the inputs.
You know, destination E hasn't updated yet, though, because it hasn't gotten through the, it's on the exact same cycle. Does that make sense? It's the split instruction which is specified on R9, right? R9's not going to begin destination E yet until that it gets all the way through the execute right back stage.
So 9 is not going to be. Yes, but the issue is what we're trying to do is we're trying to pair the two values that we want. We need to send them, the rule is that we need to send them to the register file at the same time. There's no multi-cycle operation in the register file. So if we want to write 1700 to register 9 in the same clock cycle, the inputs to the register file for writing better be 9 and 1700. And this is what this accomplishes, this design here. So there are some timing issues we'll talk about later with respect to what about other instructions, but for one instruction, we need to send the pair of values, the register number and the value to write at the same time, and that write will happen with our register file after the single rising edge of the clock will trigger it and make it happen. Yes. So the DestD here, this is the value, the DestD, this DestD column,
yeah,
is the value in this register.
But it looks like it's already setting DestD in that part.
What do you mean setting, which DestD?
Like, DestD is now after that part, DestD is now 9, where.
So this DestD here, or what? Mm-hmm. So this DestD represents the value of this register, not the input here. And this DestD represents the value in this register, which is the input there. Is that clearer?
Yeah.
So I call it DestD because it stores the DestD for this instruction. But yeah, the confusion is, why do we have two DestDs here? So this is the one stored in this register, the one stored in that register. They're both DestD because they both become DestD when the instruction needs to input a DestD to the register file.
Okay.
Okay, other points of confusion on this picture? Okay, so now that we have our timing, let's talk about the performance we get from doing this pipelining in sort of a more realistic scenario. So we can say, let's just look at the delays of different parts of our circuit. So let's say this add 2 takes 80 picoseconds, the instruction memory takes 200 picoseconds, we'll assume the split is negligible time. The register file read takes 200 picoseconds, takes 125 picoseconds, and so on. So we have this timing. And if we didn't have pipelining, if we didn't have the pipeline registers, we would just figure out what's the slowest path we have to go all the way through this circuit. And that's going to be everything but add 2, because we have to go from PC to instruction memory to register file to adder back to the register file. That's the slowest thing we have to do. Yes, we also need to add 2 to the PC, but that can happen while we're reading from the instruction memory. So it doesn't actually affect the amount of time we need in our clock cycle. So a clock cycle is going to be determined by the slowest path. So we'll get about one instruction done every 550 picoseconds. And the slowest path is going to be is called the critical path. It's critical to determining what your clock cycle can be. So with pipelining, we need to worry about the slowest stage, which is going to be the stage where we have to go from the PC through the instruction memory, because that takes more time than anything else we're doing in any stage. We need to get the value from the PC through the instruction memory and into the registers after the instruction memory before decode. So that's 200 picoseconds, and we also need to wait for those registers we added. So it's 200 picoseconds plus whatever the register delay is to actually store the values we read from the instruction memory. So this means that we get one instruction done every 200 picoseconds and change. As far as what you see, if you observe what are we finishing in this pipeline, and our latency is 800 picoseconds, because we have 4 stages and we need to wait for all of them for an instruction that we start to actually finish. So it's about that. So it's 800 picoseconds from the time we start reading an instruction from the instruction memory to when we are consider ourselves done with writing its value to the register file. So, questions about timing here? Yeah.
Didn't we combine the first 2 stages?
Fetch and PC update? Yes, and that exists here. So if you look at our picture here, what I've called fetch includes this add 2, which is the PC update we have to do for So the question is, why do we combine fetch and PC update if fetch might be our slowest stage? Like, isn't that a bad way to divide things? So there's 2 reasons. So one is that we need to read from the instruction memory in general, not in this case, but in general, to know how to do the PC update. So we can't really take a shortcut. The other reason is that in this case, it absolutely makes sense to do it because the add 2 does not depend on the instruction memory at all. So it doesn't actually make anything slower at all, because we can just do it while we're reading from the instruction memory, and we have to read from the instruction memory anyways. Okay, so let's talk a little more generally about critical paths. So when you're figuring out how fast can we make a circuit, the general rule is every path from a state output, like a register output or some other sort of state element, to another state, to a state input, like a register input or a memory input, needs enough time. You need to consider all the possible paths. They all need to have enough time to do all the computation they might do, to have a stable value, because our state inputs need a stable value sufficiently before the rising edge of the clock. And that's going to determine what our cycle time has to be. The rising edge of the clock changes the outputs of the state elements, like registers, and we need enough time for those values to propagate and be stable before the next rising edge of the clock. on every possible way where values could propagate. So we look at all the possible paths we might need to send a value, how it be computed on, how it read from registers, and take the slowest of these. So for example, in our times three circuit, our slowest path was the one that went through both adders, even though we had this shortcut where we just took a value and sent it directly to a register. That didn't help us improve our speed because we needed to wait for the adder anyways. And this matters with or without pipeline. So we didn't really talk about how fast is our single cycle processor, other than that every instruction takes one cycle. But its speed is going to be determined by what the slowest path through the processor is. And there's lots of them we have to consider if we actually want to think how, how much can I make the cycle. So we have like doing the addition, getting a value from the PC and using it in the addition. We have getting a value that's from the instruction memory and using it to compute the instruction length. We have reading a value from a register and doing an ALU operation. I've just made up times, these are not real times. But what we would do is we take all these paths, we measure them, and we have what is probably our worst case path, which is reading a value from the instruction memory, then using that to read a register, then using that to do an ALU computation, then using that to read memory, and then using that to store a value in the register file. So we just take all these possible paths, we enumerate all of them, there's many more I'm not showing. We measure using some tool we don't tell you how to make, how long they need, and we take whatever is slowest, and that's how long our clock cycle needs to be. So it's always the worst case, even though there are plenty of faster things. Note that this means, for example, even though adds don't use the data memory, in our single cycle processor, we're paying for the data memory every single cycle because we need our cycle time to be long enough to deal with it, even though many instructions don't use it. So we can apply the same principle to a simpler processor. So we can just enumerate all the paths in our add processor. This is actually like feasible to do by hand, unlike our other processor. Our full single cycle processor. And you get our cycle time. And we can do the same process for the pipeline version of this. But in the pipeline version, things don't always start with the PC register. You have these other registers where values start, and other registers besides our register file where values end up. So when we're looking at our pipeline processor, we have all these paths. We have a path going through the add to, we have a path going through the instruction memory into the fetch decode registers, we have paths from the fetch decode registers through the register file, reading a register, and so on. Each of these are separate paths, and we measure the time for each of them, and whichever is longest determines our cycle time. So, which is basically the slowest stage time. And that's our critical path. And this is something that people who design real processors have tools which can figure out what's the slowest path from a register to a register, basically. Or from a register to a memory. And they work really hard to make that as low as possible because they want their processors to be fast. So. Any questions on this procedure in general? Okay, so since there are no questions on that, so here's an exercise. So I have some timings for our pipelined add queue processor and a register delay. So let's say I double the speed of the instruction memory. I determine the instruction memory is what's making this processor horribly slow, so I make it twice as fast. How much should I improve throughput? So figure this out, compare with your neighbor. has an answer that they're reasonably confident in? See? So how did you get that? So 200 over. Okay, so one idea is 200 over 25. So where did those numbers come from? 200 over 125. So where did those numbers come from? The throughput for the first one is, sorry? What? Okay, so why was that 1 over 200 picoseconds? So 200 picoseconds is the longest amount of work we have to do in a stage. And this is almost right, and you've caught the other thing. So let's get to the other part and we'll fix the problem. So what about the 125? Where did that come from? Yeah. Okay, so why do we care about the register file write if we were previously worried about the instruction memory? So it gets half to 100, and 100 is no longer the slowest thing we need to worry about. So when we're making this 100, that's not the slowest thing. It's either the register file read or write is the slowest thing. So there's one very subtle error you made, and someone, I think, wants to point it out to me, yeah? So we need to account for the register delay, which is an easy thing to miss. So we need to account for that. Not only do we need to do the register file read, but we also need to get the value out of the old register or into the new register. So we actually want not 200 over 25, but 210 over 135, because we have the register delay in the original case, and the same register delay in the new case. Register delay in the original case is from reading from the PC or writing to the fetch decode registers. And that ends up being D, I believe, because I constructed this question deliberately to make sure that those two cases had different answers if I did it right. And this is a common thing you see when you optimize pipelines, the issue that, yeah, I made the instruction memory much faster, and some of that helped me, some of it didn't. That you're playing this game of performance whack-a-mole, where you fix the instruction memory, it's no longer a problem, and now you have to worry about everything else. And that's going to be what happens when you try to optimize the performance of a pipeline processor. You make each component faster, and now it doesn't matter anymore because it's no longer the slowest thing, and you need to worry about what is now the slowest thing, which previously didn't matter. Like, when we started out, it wouldn't matter if I made my register file 50 picoseconds slower. But now it will. So any questions on how you figure this sort of thing out? Yeah?
I don't know how you figure it out, but like once you have figured it out, can you just like adjust the speed of your clock to match it?
So what do you mean? So this question is, how does this relate to actually adjusting the clock speed? So if when we're setting the clock speed, we're going to actually do this work of saying what should the throughput be given our speed, and we're going to set the clock speed to that.
So you can just like adjust your clock speed.
So the assumption is that whoever builds our processor is going to set the clock speed to the fastest speed they know will work.
Okay.
That's generally what we're going to assume because that's what you would do. And they're not going to set it to a speed that's too fast because that might not operate correctly. And they're not going to set it to a speed that's too slow because that's a waste. There might be in reality like reasons you might deliberately set it too slow, like saving power, but for now we're just going to assume that you set the clock speed as fast as you can and no faster. Which means that someone needs to do this actual measurement I told you to do to figure out what's that clock speed. So other questions? Okay, so we have our general picture of a pipeline, and we're going to want to actually implement this eventually in HCL. So first we're going to have you implement our sequential processor in HCL, and then we're going to have you do this procedure, but in text, where you take our, where you start out with this, and you add those registers. And our book follows a particular convention for this, which is kind of weird, as far as what it calls those pipeline registers. So in our book in HCL, and we're going to follow this particular convention. So we're going to call the input to a pipeline register is going to be named after the stage we're inputting from. And we're going to use a lowercase letter for that. So a lowercase f means an input from the fetch stage. In this case, f underscore array means the array value being sent from the fetch stage. So that's going to be the name for the input to that register. And the output of that register is going to be named after the stage it's being output to, which is decode. And we're going to use a capital letter for the outputs. So capital DRA means the value that is RA being input into the code stage. And we have the same thing for all the other values we're storing in these pipeline registers. I'm not going to say this is a great convention, but it's one which is going to work well with HCL and which our textbook uses, which is why I'm explaining it. And I have those things reversed there. Okay. And yes, apparently I decided that this register wasn't backwards, so I did that wrong. So that's the convention we're going to follow. And this works nicely with register banks. So you remember that when we talked about register banks in HCL, that this would be, with this naming convention, is going to be declared as register FD. And this as register lowercase d uppercase e. So this is what we would recommend doing. We're going to be testing the correctness of what you implement in HCL. So if you want to come up with a different convention, that's fine, but I don't recommend it. So once we have this naming convention and we know, what we want to, we know what registers we need, we can actually write this out as HCL. So we'll do something where we'll have the beginning of our processor will look very much like what you did in lab yesterday. And we'll take our value from the instruction memory and put it into the registers that go from fetch to decode. In decode, we'll take our value from the registers and send it to the register file and so on. So this is going to be very much like how you're going to end up writing the single cycle processor in HCL, except instead of getting a value directly from the instruction memory, you're going to get it from some register bank that passed it on from the instruction memory ultimately. And or instead of getting it directly from the register file, you're going to get it from a register bank, which was set from the register file in a previous cycle. So this makes sense how we translated our IQ processor to actual HCL code. So this is the general procedure. You're going to end up doing it for, our full processor, which is going to be obviously more work, and we'll have you do it in pieces, and we'll talk about ways of doing it which are maybe a bit more systematic, because yes, you can take this picture and then figure out where the stages are, and then draw registers across each line. And you could do that, and you could complete the assignments, but I don't think that would be a very easily debuggable way of doing it. So we're gonna look at it probably more, you know, when you do the assignments, it's gonna be more of programming with text and drawing pictures. And in the interest of trying to stay somewhat synced with the other lecture where I went slower because there's more mistakes, I'll be stopping here. So any questions before I stop? So just remember that there is a homework due next week. There's also a pre-quiz for next week. Please actually do that.